Welcome to the podcast of Focus 580, featuring interviews with newsmakers and experts on international affairs and daily life, hosted by David Inge at WILL Radio, Urbana, Illinois. Please support this service by becoming a member and visit us on the web at will.uiuc.edu.
Focus 580. My name is Les Schulte, filling in for David Inge this hour. It's 11:06, 48 degrees here in Urbana-Champaign. We're going to have a very interesting hour here on Focus 580. Our guest today is podiatrist Robert Bourne. Dr. Bourne is a podiatrist at Carl Clinic here in Urbana. Good morning, doctor.
Good morning.
And if you do have a call about foot care or a problem you might be having or just an interest in your feet, I'm sure Dr. Bourne will give a crack at it and we'll see what we can do. The numbers to call are 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Or if you're out of the 217 area code, you can call toll-free 800-222-9455. And so kind of let's get started, doctor. The foot's a pretty interesting mechanism, isn't it? I was thinking about the interview today, you know, you don't think about your feet very often unless, I guess, they hurt. But it's just a pretty interesting appendage.
True. We take it for granted. It's a very complicated system, and we really ask it to do a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, we tend to abuse it as well. So that's where we run into trouble.
Mm-hmm. It has to support our weight and all and get us around.
And do all the things we want it to do, work for 16 or 18 hours a day on hard concrete surfaces. And as I said, it takes a lot of abuse.
Mm-hmm. How many bones are in the feet, by the way?
Well, it depends. There's 28 bones as far as there's different accessory bones in the foot in general.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, there's and as far as the number of joints, and it's a very complicated structure.
Mm-hmm. What's the relationship of the foot to the rest of the body?
Well, obviously, it provides a mechanism of basically being able to adapt to uneven surfaces as we walk,
mm-hmm.
and also to give us propulsion and ambulation. So it is a situation where if we have misalignment of the foot, it can affect other portions of the body as well.
Mm-hmm. When you see people sort of walk or pigeon-toed or their feet sort of splay out when they when they walk, is that a foot problem or is that a knee problem?
Frequently that's more related to hip position more than anything else.
Mm-hmm.
You have to realize that all the bones are connected, and if there is a rotational problem in the hip where the hip is either externally or internally rotated, that will usually be seen much more readily in the position of the foot.
Mm-hmm.
There are certain conditions that will give you a gait that is either toed out or toed in with deformity inside the foot, but the majority of the time it's more proximal or upwards in terms of the problem.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm going to get the problem thing started here with a story from my holidays when I went home from my family reunion over the holidays. One of my older brothers comes hobbling in. He's got a boot on his foot, and he's got a pin sticking out of one of his toes. And so I said, what in the world happened to you? And he said, well, I've had this toe that's been bothering me for years. And mm-hmm. eventually he says the pain got so bad, you know, that he knew they were going to have to do something. He called it a hammer toe.
Mm-hmm.
And his doctor had put apparently a pin in the toe to straighten it out, I guess. So what is a hammer toe?
Well, was this his big toe or one of his lesser toes?
It was one of his lesser toes.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, then it probably was a hammer toe. A hammer toe basically is a flexion contracture deformity of the toe, but technically it's at a specific digit.
Mm-hmm.
It's really the second digit back from the tip of the toe.
Really?
Mm-hmm. There's a mallet toe deformity where there's a flexion contracture deformity at the end digit, and then a claw toe deformity where you have it flexed at both particular areas, or both joints are involved.
Mm-hmm.
So these can give you a variety of problems in terms of shoe fit, abnormal pressure on the toes as a result of the deformity that's there. Frequently, we try to accommodate this by making sure there's enough room inside the shoe, depth of the toe box of the shoe, padding inside of the shoe to take the pressure off those areas. But when it gets to a point where the deformity is so severe, you have to do something in regards to straightening the toe out. The deformity itself can come about as a result of either muscle imbalance in those particular areas, previous injury, where you go ahead and either stub the toe and possibly go ahead and tear one of the attachments of the ligaments or the tendons. So there's a number of reasons for the hammer toe to form. But there's other ways to go ahead and treat it as well.
Mm-hmm. So with the pin in the toe, we're basically just holding it in a straight position for a while?
No, basically you have to go in and either remove a portion of bone or remove a portion of bone and the cartilage to go ahead and then do a fusion of the joint. Usually it's the second joint back from the tip of the toe. We're going to remove the cartilage, put it in a straighter position, and then put the pin in there to stabilize it until those bones fuse together, and then remove the pin, and now you've got a very stable toe. The important thing is that it is stable so that you can still propel off the tip of the toe. Mm-hmm. And so that's the hard part in terms of trying to get somebody to cooperate long enough so that bone can heal properly.
Mm-hmm. And you were mentioning before we started the program that there are different instruments now that can be used in situations like that.
Different materials that you can use in terms of trying to achieve that fusion in that particular joint. Either a absorbable pin that can be put in there that doesn't have to stick out the end of the toe, or the old-fashioned method, which is still tried and true as far as the pin coming out of the tip of the toe. So there's ways to do it, and unfortunately it just takes time for it to heal.
Mm-hmm. If you have a question for Dr. Bourne this morning about foot care or foot problems, feel free to give us a call here on Focus. The number to call is 333-9455 and 800-222-9455. And let's go to line four right now. Line four, you're on the air with Dr. Bourne. There we go. Line four. Nope. All right, we lost him. if you have a question, give us a call, 333-9455, 800-222-9455. Do we as a people take very good care of our feet?
Well, I think in general we do our best. I think one of the biggest problems in terms of care at this point is something that sounds pretty simple, and that's shoes.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of gone are the days that you can go into a shoe store and they either specialize in shoes or they actually do something as novel as measuring your feet.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's really no shoe stores left anymore that do that. So someone goes into a department store or goes into Walmart and says, well, I need myself a new pair of shoes. So they go in and basically think, well, I've worn a size 9. I'm going to go ahead and buy a size 9. And they don't realize the fact that the foot changes over time. It'll change in terms of length and width as the ligaments tend to stretch. The bones don't grow, but if you can imagine the arch of the foot and you go ahead and as it flattens out over time, it'll go ahead and elongate as well. So now you're in a shoe that if you feel as though I've worn a shoe for years, so the same size, you're going to be in a shoe that's too narrow for you and it's too short as well.
Mm-hmm.
So this can bring about problems.
I guess my assumption has always been, I guess once we've reached adulthood, our foot size wouldn't change. That's not
true,
right?
As people well know, you tend to shrink over time with gravity.
Mm-hmm.
And so the foot changes as well.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Let's go to line one. Line one, you're on the air with Dr. Bourne.
Yes, Dr. Bourne, I was wondering when are arch supports indicated, and if we get them for our shoes or whatever when we buy them, how do we proceed to do it?
Arch supports usually are based, use of arch supports are based on maybe symptoms someone might have, either some heel pain, arch pain in general. It's usually something that is a problem in certain shoes because of the fact that you have to have enough interior volume space inside the shoe to accommodate the support itself. So the way the shoes are made these days, there's not a lot of extra room inside of the shoe. So you put something inside and then the shoe itself becomes too tight. So you have to be careful to make sure that you have enough volume room inside the shoe to accommodate a support.
I was wondering, in as much as when I use those instep things, they seem to help.
Mm-hmm.
But I never knew when I bought a new shoe whether I should just start gradually and see what fits the best or if that's not
well,
a good thing.
If you've had good success with a particular type of support in a shoe, I don't see there's any reason to change. If you can, as you get a new shoe, I would just transfer that support into that new shoe.
All right. Well, thank you, Doctor.
You're welcome.
Okay, thanks for the call. Let's go to line two, Charleston. You're on the air with Dr. Bourne. Nope. Okay. let's go to line four. All right. Line four. You're on the air with Dr. Bourne. There we are. Line four.
Now we have a state of that.
Hello?
Hello?
Yeah, you're on the air. Go right ahead if you have a question.
Okay. I was just wondering about, like they mentioned about our support, how long do those things last that you, I went to a doctor and he prescribed it and I put it in, I switched from shoes to shoes. And they've done fine, but how long do they last to where, you know, you're not going to go back with your problem because of a bone spur?
Well, basically, it depends on the material that the support is made out of. If it's made out of a, let's say, a plastic type of material, which is a heat moldable material, they last for a long period of time. It depends on the process the support is made by. If it is heat moldable the patient is fairly heavy and you're on your feet a lot in terms of hard surfaces, the plastic tends to want to flatten out into its original flat shape, and it usually will last about 3 to 5 years.
Right.
The key is if you notice all of a sudden that, boy, you know, the support used to work real well and it doesn't seem to be doing the job now, then it's probably time to have it looked at to see if either it can be adjusted or it might need to be replaced.
Well, you know, I worked on cement for, you know, 30, 40 years.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to get those, and they are those plastic molding, then it's got the pan on top of it.
Right.
And they've lasted well. And if I put on another pair of shoes and not pad in, by the end of the day, I can tell the bone spur is still there.
Right. It's true that the spur never goes away. It's just that you go ahead and support the foot so it doesn't become inflamed.
That way it's not sliding sideways. And then I always thought the bone spur was straight down, but I guess it comes down and kind of hooks, and then when your shoe's not fitting quite right, then it'll dig into the, you know, your heel sideways, and that's where I got out of the problem. But it's worked so far, but I was just wondering, you know, if I shouldn't get, like, another pair and these and them, too.
No, I think they last a long time, so as long as you don't mind switching them from shoe to shoe, then I think you'd be willing, it'd be fine just to do that.
All righty. Well, I appreciate talking to you.
You're welcome.
All right. Thanks for the call. Let's go to line one, and we have a caller in Savoy.
Hello. I've injured my ankle, and I'm wondering if that's part of the foot that you might be able to answer a question about.
Sure.
It's a severe twist. Happened 2.5 weeks ago. The first 3 days, I had an air cast and stayed off it completely because I couldn't put weight on it. And since then, it's gotten a little bit better. I've been putting heat on it all night, every night. But it's still in severe pain, just above the top 180 degrees or the half circle of the ankle bone, all around that. And I'm curious, do you have any idea of what it could be? Could it be muscular? There's no swelling and no bruising.
So this was a inversion sprain, so the problem is on the outside of your ankle? Or?
Yes, sir.
Okay, so did you see anybody for this, or did you just have
one? I went to convenient care.
Okay. Did they x-ray it to make sure there wasn't any?
No x-ray.
Okay. You know, it's one of those things that at 2.5 weeks, if you've seen improvement, then it's not unheard of to still be uncomfortable.
Okay.
As long as it's not real painful on the bone itself, as well as pain when you're off of it. You know, like you're trying to go to sleep at night, and if it hurts and throbs.
Yeah, it is waking me up in the morning.
Okay. That might be something to look at then in terms of have it reevaluated. Maybe go ahead and have an x-ray done, make sure there wasn't any bone damage in those particular areas. Have you still continued to use the splint?
No.
Okay, you got to use the splint, I would think. I mean, certainly soft tissue injuries, especially if it's been fairly severe, then it's going to take at least a good 6 to 8 weeks to heal. So
okay.
You got to be patient with it.
Okay.
The other is the use of heat. I'm not a big fan of heat, especially you should probably still be icing it more than heat.
Really?
Yeah.
Do Epsom salts do anything?
No.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
All right. Let's go to line two. We have a caller in Charleston. Good morning. You're on the air with Dr. Bourne.
Yes, hi, doctor. I have noticed in the last week or two on the upper left side of my left foot, just under the small toe, kind of a spongy side of the foot, what feels like a little notch or a cyst you can kind of roll it with your fingers, you know. I wonder if you have any idea what that might be or if that's anything common.
Was this, you say, on the top of the foot or the...
No, it's on the bottom.
On the bottom.
The underside of where the small toe would be.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of a, not right, you know, not right under the small toe, but just below it.
Okay.
Kind of a spongy part of the foot there, you know, and I can, and I can roll with my finger this little knot.
Now, is it painful when you do that?
No,
or?
No, not really. And it's not painful to stand on or work on or why. I don't notice it.
You know? And you can't see any, there's no change in the skin or anything of that nature?
No, it's underneath the skin.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, there's a lot of times we'll see areas that will be in the fatty portion of the foot, which are if they're asymptomatic, it's hard to say whether anything needs to be done with it. But you know, these are things that are difficult to assess, certainly without seeing it.
Yeah.
And always to be on the safe side, it's worthwhile to have somebody take a look at it if you're concerned about it, to evaluate it and see what it might actually be.
Yeah.
It's very rare for it to be anything of substantial concern, but I'd certainly hate to give you advice and to say forget it and turn out to be something later. So it's always worthwhile to have it checked out.
Yeah, okay. I just wondered if it was anything you had maybe come across, you know, whether it's something I could expect that might just dissolve on its own or...
How long has it been there?
Just about a week.
Well, you know, certainly with something like that, you could go ahead and keep a close eye on it for about a four-week period of time and see if it does go away. Chances are it probably won't, but and if it doesn't, they have somebody take a look at it.
All right. Thank you very much.
Okay.
All right. Thanks for the call. Let's go to line three, a caller in Champaign. You're on the air with Dr. Robert Bourne.
Yes, doctor. The reason I'm calling is that I've been a runner for a good part of my life. I'm 50 years old. And recently I've been having problems with my Achilles tendon. And on one side, I noticed that I got a bump, and it's still there. And anyway, the other side started to hurt, too, so I've kind of given up running for a little while and thinking that, you know, if I relaxed it for a while, maybe it would get better and then I could maybe go back to it. Do you have any suggestions for therapy or what I could do for this?
Now, is the bump in the tendon itself above the attachment of the heel?
It is. It's above the heel, and it's in the tendon itself.
Okay. About how high up?
Oh, I would say 2 inches, maybe.
Is it above the back heel counter of the shoe? You know, where the shoe comes up, and is it in that particular area where the shoe crosses the tendon, or is it above that?
I think it's a little bit below that.
A little bit below that? Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, it's one of the things that, you know, it's hard to you know, again, assess over the telephone, but you know, it's not uncommon for runners to come up with Achilles tendonitis that kind of turns into you know, a more chronic inflammatory condition where there's more swelling inside the tendon itself. A lot of times it responds pretty well to therapy and especially use of a heel lift. Now, the heel lift is something that has to be firm enough to actually take some of the pull and pressure off the tendon itself. And sometimes I'll use a quarter or even 3/8 inch of lift of a firm material to do that. And sometimes that's enough to take the pressure off the tendon and have the swelling subside, use of oral anti-inflammatories, and also sometimes icing, ultrasound, things like that. So if it's been there for a while and rest hasn't taken care of it, I think it's probably something you should have somebody take a look at.
Okay. When they prescribe therapy for it, what is that usually involved?
Well, most of the time it depends on how tender it is. If it's a situation where it's still acutely painful, again, sometimes we can use ultrasound with some anti-inflammatory medication mixed in with it, and then after that, more stretching and things like that.
Okay. Well, it seems like when I wake up in the morning, they'll be very tender.
Yeah.
And I'll just, while I'm laying in bed, I'll try to stretch my legs out, stretch them, and that seems to help.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but I tend to notice it more in the morning than I do the rest of the day. And like I say, I've laid off of it from the running, so that's helped too.
That's typical with tendonitis. It's going to give you that morning pain and stiffness and burning sensation. You get up and walk around a little bit, it's going to feel better. And if you sat for a while and get up, it's going to be sore again. So that's typical for the Achilles tendonitis.
Okay. All righty. Well, thank you very much.
Welcome.
Thanks for the call. It's 11:25. You're listening to Focus 580. Our guest this morning is Dr. Robert Bourne, a podiatrist at Carle Clinic. And if you have a question you'd like to ask Dr. Bourne, our local numbers are 333-9455 outside of the 217 area code. You can call toll-free 800-222-9455. Let's go to line number one. We have a caller in Champaign. Hello, you're on the air with Dr. Bourne.
Hello, doctor. I'm 28 years old, been athletic most of my life, done a lot of soccer, a lot of running, and throughout my life I've always had pain in the arches of the foot, and recently, over the last maybe 5 years or so, I've also had a lot of pain sort of on the side of the foot, about halfway between the ball and the ankle. I took a look online so I could try to tell you something anatomical as to where I think it is, and I came up with maybe the abductor hallucis muscle or the medial plantar fascia.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a pain that if I do a heavy day of athletics afterwards in the nighttime and even through the next day, can be rather severe and really feels kind of like a cramping. And I can feel that there's sort of a mass of muscle under there. I'm wondering if there's any type of massage or heating or anything I can do to relieve that pain or maybe something I can do to prevent it from even happening.
Well, it's certainly you may be in a situation where if your foot tends to you have a fairly normal appearing foot, or does it tend to flatten out when you stand on it? Or
I would say it's close to the flat side, but okay. not altogether abnormal.
Well, certainly it sounds like the pain that you have on the bottom surface of the foot and even the medial aspect by the muscle belly you're talking about can be related to an excessive pronation or flattening out of the foot. And then as that action happens, that muscle that attaches to the big toe area and is on the inside of the arch tends to try to pull the arch, and it's not really a very effective muscle to do that, and it can become strained, and it can swell, and then that can give you problems, as you're also related to, in terms of the cramping. One of the nerves that supplies the bottom of the foot runs through that particular area, and it can start to be impinged and give you that particular type of sensation, especially noted at night, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a situation where it would be best to consider having it looked at so that the foot's structure can be assessed as well as the lower extremity. One of the things we see frequently that goes along with this is some tightness in the Achilles tendon, so that's a factor as well. So frequently, you know, stretching exercises, the deep massage is fine to use, but something to then go ahead and utilize in the shoe to support the foot and not only just support the arch but change the mechanics of the foot so as to make it function more efficiently would be best.
Okay, and I would have to see a podiatrist to sort of just...
Yeah, I think that would be the best thing to do.
Okay, thanks very much.
You're welcome.
All right. Thanks for your call. Our lines are open right now if you'd like to get in and and talk to Dr. Bourne. If you have a question about your feet or foot care, call 333-9455 or 800-222-9455. We had a lady who called a few minutes ago who didn't stay on the line, but she did have a question. She wanted to know about Morton's syndrome.
Morton's syndrome.
Was that...
Well, that's interesting because, you know, that's why in medicine it's always kind of funny. There's a Dr. Morton that has his name put to a number of different things. There's typically a Morton's neuroma, which is a nerve that can become irritated and entrapped in the foot. And that's something that gives you symptoms with pain, a numbness, tingling, burning sensation in the areas of the third and fourth toes. That's something that I found more and more does actually respond to utilization of support in the shoe, which sounds kind of interesting. I think that more of the problem of Morton's neuroma is a biomechanical one than necessarily a pure entrapment of the nerve. But because in the past we used to look at these, give them cortisone injections, if that wasn't successful, we would physically go in and remove the nerve, which would take care of the problem. But more and more, if you try to treat the mechanics of the foot, we've had better success at going ahead and taking care of those particular symptoms. There's another, it's called Morton's toe, which is where the second toe is appears to be longer than the other toes, either because the second toe itself is longer or the second metatarsal is longer. I don't think that has much much to do about anything in terms of function of the foot, except for the fact that the shoe fit becomes an issue because it's longer and can tend to cause that typical second-digit hammer toe.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Let's go to a cell phone call on line one. Good morning. You're on the air with Dr. Bourne.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Could you discuss the difference between Achilles tendonitis and Achilles tendinosis as it relates to runners?
Well, Achilles tendonitis is usually related to either the mild pain and inflammation in those particular areas, where it's either the attachment of the Achilles tendon, where it attaches into the heel bone itself, and then, you know, usually about maybe 3 or 4 inches above that. Usually then the situation where this is either a more of a chronic problem, where the body of the tendon itself becomes somewhat diseased, is more the Achilles tendinosis. And it tends to, the tendinosis is more difficult to treat, certainly. Sometimes it requires a surgical intervention in terms of trying to clean up the body and the tendon and kind of irritate it, and so that the body will then turn a chronic injury into an acute one and then go ahead and heal it. But both of these a lot of times respond to conservative therapy, again, like the other caller said, with heel lifts, physical therapy, ultrasound, things like that. And if it responds, fine. If it doesn't, there's always surgery that may be able to take care of it.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
All right. Thanks for the call. We have a caller from Champaign on line two. Good morning. You're on the air with Dr. Bourne.
Hi.
Hi.
I have a question, and thanks for taking my call. I have a condition called amniotic band syndrome, and I don't know if you're familiar with it or not, but it has affected my toes, so that the growth of my toes were stunted. And I am concerned that as I get older, I'm 35 now, as I get older, is there anything I should be doing now to help prevent future problems in terms of my mobility? I basically have my left great toe that's almost of normal length, and all the rest are either, I mean, I have a single joint on all my right toes, and I have just little skin nubbies for the left four remaining toes on my left foot.
Well, the big thing is making sure you keep your big toe.
Yeah.
You know, because it is a situation where you tend to have lost the ability of the digits to provide you with stability and propulsion. That's about the biggest thing that's important. The other is to also try to wear shoes that accommodate your foot. It can be a difficult thing. But also to making sure that if you have a normal other structure, the foot is normal in terms of the medial longitudinal arch as well as the transverse arch, trying to go ahead and make it as stable as possible as well during gait.
Okay.
So that would be the thing that would be probably most important.
So some orthotics that would be helpful, you think?
I would think, you know, again, it would probably be best to be evaluated to see what your basic foot structure is, what it's left with. Take a look at your gait, and also in terms of having somebody watch you walk and see exactly how you've compensated for the loss of those other digits, and then to kind of go from there in terms of building something that would make you a little bit more stable, or maybe looking at you and say, boy, you're doing fine, and there's really no need for any further treatment.
Okay. Cool. I've been debating coming in and seeing you for quite some time, so I thought, Ed, this is a great opportunity for me to go in and ask.
That's certainly not a lot of – we don't really see a lot of patients with that particular problem. So it'd be kind of interesting to see.
Well, okay. Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot for the call. Our numbers, again, are 333-9455, or outside of the 2117 area code, you can call toll-free 800-222-9455 if you have a question for Dr. Bourne this morning about your feet or how they operate or questions in general. He'll give a crack at it. We've heard from several runners today. One of the things, though, that you hear that we haven't heard yet this morning that runners tend to complain about are shin splints.
Shin splints, yeah.
What's a shin splint, and how do you get it, and what do you do about it?
Well, there's usually two types of shin splints. One's an anterior shin splint, one's posterior shin splints. And the anterior ones are just on the front of the leg. And they're usually on the front and the outside of the where the tibia is. Most of the time we see that particular problem from overuse and where someone is the overuse or actually doing a lot of hills as well. We don't really see that around here much, but sometimes when people race elsewhere, they can come into have those particular problems. But and that's basically treated with making sure that they train properly, rest, anti-inflammatories, icing in those particular areas. Can become a problem if you have significant amount of swelling in that particular compartment of the leg. And then if that happens, and then you can have some neurologic symptoms, as some numbness, tingling in the foot, or even some vascular problems as a result of the pressure, and it can be an emergency type of thing. So if it's severe, then it has to be treated quickly. Posterior shin splints is usually inflammation of what's called the tibialis posterior muscle and tendon, and that's a muscle that's really responsible for trying to prevent the foot from flattening out, and that's usually a symptom of, can be overused, but it's more of a biomechanical problem of the foot, with the foot overpronating. So that's something that usually has to be addressed with either making sure that the shoe that they're utilizing is proper, or utilizing over-the-counter support, or custom orthosis if the problem is severe enough to go ahead and warrant that.
Okay. Let's go to line number 4, our toll-free line. We have a caller from Charleston. Good morning. You're on the air with Dr. Bourne.
Good morning. I have a question. You were talking about the nerve entrapment this morning, and for several years I have complained about my feet and about the balls of my feet, and they, like when I step on something very small, it feels like I'm stepping on a boulder, and then I have spasms, and they'll go through the ends of your toes, and they're very uncomfortable. They'll wake you up during the night. And one person said I might have, what is it called, nerveopathy. Right now it's moved up to like to my ankles too. You know, they're feeling very stiff and uncomfortable. The feet, I can notice the ball of feet all the time. If I happen to, they sort of feel numb at times. But then if you hit it, it hit them, oh man, it really, really hurts.
Yeah, that's, your symptoms are kind of much more consistent with that of a more general nerve problem than any specific one. Like I was talking about entrapment of a particular nerve, that means someone would come in complaining about pain in that third and fourth toe, period, only on one foot. So as you said, you've got kind of a multiple amount of symptoms. Also, that pain in the third and fourth toe is when you're bearing weight. When they're off their foot, they really don't have any problems in those particular areas. So when someone comes in and says that they're having pain, numbness, tingling, cramping sensation, it can be at night off weight bearing, then you have to start thinking about a neurologic problem, whether it's a nerve entrapment somewhere above the foot, or if it's a sensory nerve problem, as you're talking about a sensory neuropathy, where all the sensory nerves are kind of going crazy and giving your brain back bad information in regards to what's going on with the foot itself. That's something that you really need to kind of look at and examine and to see. Usually the patients are going to make the diagnosis themselves by history, but you have to have the specific questions to ask and then have it match your exam.
It's in both feet.
Yeah, it sounds much more like it might be typical of a sensory neuropathy more than anything else. But, then it's important to make sure that you make the right diagnosis and then try to see what the possible cause of the neuropathy is and then see if that can be treated, because you don't want to let that go, especially if it's a local entrapment somewhere, because the longer it goes on, then the more permanent damage someone might have.
Well, I know it seems like it's getting worse, and I did buy a wider shoe.
Yeah.
It seems to help by wearing a wider shoe.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like it's a shoe problem, though. I mean, a lot of times people with neuropathy, they'll do things like that, and they'll say, "Well, it'll feel better for a while," but then it's not something that's more permanent. So that's something I think it'd be best for it to be thoroughly examined to make sure that you can pin down the specific problem.
Hey, well, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
All right. Thanks for the call. Let's go to line 1. We have a caller in Champaign. Good morning. You're on the air with Dr. Bourne. Line 1?
All right.
Oh, there we are. Yeah, we can hear you. Go ahead.
Okay. I have a question. I have a friend who has a problem with the big toes on each foot, and he's an elderly person, about 85 years old. And I know my wife had the same problem years ago, and she's now 71, and she had an operation on it. It's the big toe, which kind of turns off, for example, on your right foot, it would turn way, way back to the right, and there's a kind of a big bony structure that sticks out. And my wife had that operation, and the toe was straightened out, and some bone was removed. I don't know what you call that condition.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's basically a bunion is what it's called.
A bunion, yeah.
Right.
Okay, well, this man has a very severe bunion.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just wondering if a person that age could have something done to their feet with some kind of an operation like my wife had.
Certainly, the answer is yes, as long as their general health would allow that to be done.
Mm-hmm.
If their circulation is good, their cardiac station or function is good, and everything else is fine, then something could be done for that particular problem. Certainly, if the bunion is severe, then it might be worthwhile. They can always treat it conservatively with shoes that can accommodate that particular as well, making sure they're wide and deep enough so that there's not an irritation to that particular spot. But yes, if everything else checks out fine medically, then the idea of doing something surgically could be entertained. Certainly, it's something that X-rays have to be done, take a look at the specifics of the bony deformity, advise the patient as to what procedure would need to be done to fix the problem, and then go through the possible risks and complications with the patient and making sure that the benefits outweigh the risks. And those are the ways you make those decisions on elective type of surgery versus conservative management.
Well, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thanks for the call. It's 11:42 on Focus 580. Our guest this morning is Dr. Robert Bourne. Dr. Bourne is a podiatrist at Carle Clinic here in Urbana. We have about 15 minutes left if you'd like to get in and ask Dr. Bourne a question. Our numbers are 333-9455 or 800-222-9455 if you're outside of the 217 area code. We have a caller from Danville on line 2. Let's go to line 2. You're on the air. Good morning.
Good morning. If the symptom is severe pain in a toe, and not always the same toe, and the pain lasts anywhere from 3 to 10 days, what is the difference between gout and arthritis, and what in the diagnosis, and what is the difference in treatment?
Well, basically, if you're looking at gout, which is a metabolic disease, basically, where there's a
high uric acid.
Right, increased uric acid in the body, and basically then the concentration of the uric acid in the blood hits a point where it then is high enough to diffuse out into the soft tissue, and usually the joint capsules inside the joint is where this material accumulates, and then if it gets high enough, it then crystallizes. And it crystallizes, and then when the white blood cells try to go ahead and get rid of the crystals, they literally are punctured, and fluid from the white blood cell spills out into the surrounding tissue, causing this severe and acute inflammatory reaction, where there's the area gets very red, swollen, hot, very painful. Now, the thing about gout is usually it'll affect certain joints. Frequently, it's if the patient has a history of elevated uric acid levels, then you can keep that as a consideration. But usually, the way that it'll present is very red, hot, swollen, painful joints. Usually, will be something that hurts all the time, and even with or without treatment, sometimes it, or without treatment, it may last for anywhere from 5 days to 3 weeks on its own. With treatment, obviously, with anti-inflammatories, you can get it taken care of with about 48 hours. But
is there a difference in the joint affected? I mean, consider a toe and then the middle joint and the base.
Well, the big toe is the one that's the most commonly affected, and that's at the big toe joint. Then we can see it in some of the other toes, though. I mean, it's not something that's a hard and fast rule. But it's not nearly as common as, let's say, osteoarthritis in the other toes, which is the second through the fifth toes. But usually the osteoarthritis is something that's going to be there on a more persistent basis. You're going to have pain, and it's going to last for a number of months, and it usually doesn't come and go. The other thing is to examine the toe. Sometimes if the toe hurts, does it hurt when you actually press on the toe or move the joint? because arthritis by its definition is inflammation in the joint itself, and sometimes you can have other conditions that may give you the pain, and it's really not in the joint, just seems to be that way.
But both of them are treated with anti-inflammatories.
Usually, yes, but in different ways, where there's high doses for a short period of time with the gout, and usually lower dosages for longer period of times for the osteoarthritis.
I see. Well, thank you.
You're welcome.
All right, thanks for the call. Let's go to line one. We have a caller in Champaign. Good morning. You're on the air.
Hi. I had a question regarding women who have worn high heels for years. And what kind of long-term damage does that do to your feet? And I have a situation where I don't seem to ever be able to find shoes that are comfortable anymore. Is this something that a doctor can help you with, or are you stuck?
Well, as far as your first question, high heels, obviously when you look at a high heel and you think about the foot, you always have to stop and say, geez, you know, is that a wise thing to do? You know, would you subject other parts of your body to the same punishment just for the way it looks? And it's really not a good thing to do. You know, certainly the high heel puts your foot in a position where you're walking downhill all day with your foot cramped in a small space and subjecting the front part of your foot to a tremendous amount of forces. Wearing it for long periods of time, you can certainly have shortening of the Achilles tendon, as well as just dysfunction of the rest of the foot. The muscles don't function properly. The ligaments don't stretch in the proper way. It's just not a good thing to do. I try to have patients, if they're going to wear high heels, try to only need them or only use them when they have an occasion that they would need to wear the heel. Otherwise, try to go ahead and wear something that's going to be more conducive to the structure and the function of the foot. As far as shoes that don't feel comfortable, I mean that's hard to, you know, it's hard to say if there's problems with the abnormalities in the shape of your foot that's causing points of irritation. That might be something that could be remedied, but it's something that maybe need to be looked at so that let's say if a patient has a tightness as far as their calf muscles or the Achilles tendon is concerned, that can tend to make the foot have to compensate in ways that just make a shoe difficult to fit and use. So some of those things I think are maybe be able to be addressed to make the shoe a little more comfortable.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thanks for the call. We have a caller from Chicago on line 4. Good morning. You're on the air with Dr. Bourne. Hello, Chicago. There you are. Yeah.
Oh, hi. Anyway, I have two questions for you. One, I was diagnosed with a plantar fasciitis. They told me there's really nothing you can do for it. Is that true or not?
It's probably the most common problem that we treat, actually. There's lots of things that can be done for plantar fasciitis. Basically, plantar fasciitis is inflammation of the structure on the bottom of the foot. It's called the plantar fascia, which is really... has three different parts to it. The most common part that's inflamed is the central band of the plantar fascia. And the idea is to take a look at the foot and see why the plantar fascia may be irritated. You know, again, is it an acute problem where you injured it, or is it something that's more of a chronic problem that's secondary to the structure of your foot, overpronating your foot and stretching the plantar fascia, tightness of the Achilles tendon? There's different causes for the strain and to be placed on it, and therefore it becomes inflamed. And to address those problems, yes, a lot of things can be done for the plantar fascia.
A boot that is worn at nighttime is the one thing that was suggested.
Yeah, there's use of a night splint or a boot like that can be helpful, but the problem is that it's only effective, you know, obviously when you're wearing it, and then throughout the course of the day, you continue to irritate it.
Correct.
So some of the biggest things that someone can do initially is number one is don't walk barefoot around the house. No barefoot, no sock foot, no house slippers, because we want something that's going to go ahead and provide some support for the foot, especially to take some of the stress and strain off the plantar fascia. And that's the key. The second is to, when you're doing that, to try to wear a shoe that does have a little bit of elevation as far as the heel's concerned. And that has to do with the mechanics of walking and taking the tension off the Achilles tendon, which allows the foot to function a little bit better and doesn't put strain on the plantar fascia as well. So
okay.
Those kind of things are important. I like ice massage for the area, or deep massage to increase the circulation to the plantar fascia. That's helpful as well.
Okay, I understand. So ice is better, or a combination of both? Ice and
I'm a more ice fan than you can try contrast baths or things like that. But in the plantar fascia, a good one to do is to freeze a 12-ounce bottle of water, because then you roll the frozen bottle.
Roll your foot over it.
Because that accomplishes the massage in terms of increasing circulation through those muscles in the foot, as well as the ice to help decrease the inflammation in the plantar fascia.
Okay. I have one more question, and I don't know if this is in your area or not. I have osteoarthritis in both knee and an ankle, and I've been to two other physicians who both told me that the only way to treat the osteoarthritis in the ankle is by fusing the ankle.
Mm-hmm.
And then other physicians, I am 50 years old, and they seem to think that because of my bones are thin, that I would not be a good candidate for a surgery age.
Oh, you mean in terms of like an ankle replacement or joint replacement?
Ankle knee replacement.
Yeah. Well,
is that true? When you turn 50, it's like you're no longer.
Gosh, no, I hope not.
Yeah, really. I hope not.
I didn't realize I'd age that quickly.
Well, if there's a situation of osteoporosis, that can be a problem. And it would be nice to try to treat the osteoporosis, see if you can't go ahead and change the bone stock a little bit. But, yeah, that is a situation where certainly it would be difficult, especially in an ankle prosthesis. So that might be a problem.
Okay. Thanks for your call. Let's go to line 3, Tolono. You're on the air with Dr. Bourne.
Yes. Hi.
Hi.
Hi. This is Blanca. I would like to ask you a question about my legs. I have a kind of like a pain in my calves on my legs. Even if I don't use high heels, when I start taking a little walk, like 15 minutes or 20 minutes, I have to stop walking because I cannot stand the pain on my legs and the calves of my legs. Can you tell me what would that be? What they have make a lot of? I went to different doctors to find out what is this pain about, and I still don't know what would be the answer to that pain.
Well, usually there's two causes for that particular problem. One is where you might have a decrease in circulation to the muscles themselves, and you might have a blockage as far as in the arteries to those particular areas that would cause the muscles to cramp up as a result of that decrease in circulation. If your circulation is fine, then what that can be is actually some problems as far as the back is concerned. Frequently, there might be a narrowing of the spinal canal that can irritate the spinal cord or the peripheral nerves and give you that particular symptom. The first one is called intermittent claudication. That's the problem with circulation. And the second one would be spinal stenosis. The question is, though, let's say if you walk that 15-minute period of time and you stop and you rest a little bit, then you can walk again and it seems okay, and then back for another 15 minutes and it cramps again. Is that the situation?
I have to stop walking and go back home because I cannot start walking again. So I have to wear that kind of stockings that they are really, really tight.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't feel comfortable wearing that because sometimes during the summertime it feels really, really hard to wear that kind of stockings. And sometimes also I feel like most of all that would be the circulation of my legs, because as soon as I put my legs, elevated my legs, when I go to bed, I have to put like 3 or 4 pillows on the bed.
Mm-hmm. Well, that would be the thing to check as far as specifically in regards to how good your circulation is. Your primary care doctor can do that. And if the circulation is okay, then it would be something to have a back specialist take a look at your back.
All right. Thanks for your call. We have a couple of minutes left. And we have a caller on line 2 from Charleston. Good morning. You're on the air with Dr. Bourne.
Good morning. Could you recommend a brand for a shoe insert for plantar fasciitis?
Let's see. That depends on what shoe you're putting it in. If I know this is kind of a sexist answer, but if you're a man, I can give you lots of different recommendations. As far as a woman, if you're going to put in an athletic shoe,
yes, that's where it
okay. would
work.
It kind of depends on the type of problem or the shape of the foot that you have. But I think that the power step supports are a pretty good one to use.
Okay.
They're a blue full-length type of support. Spenco also makes a number of supports that are good for athletic shoes. Birkenstock makes some supports as well, and those are a little bit more flexible in terms of being able to use in, you know, take it in the athletic shoe. And also, since it's a three-quarter-length support, it can be used in other shoes as well. So those are some decent over-the-counter supports.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thanks for your call. And that's all we have time for today, really, as far as taking calls. Any final comments, Doctor?
None.
Mm-hmm.
That's
like,
been fun.
Sounds like picking the right pair of shoes really makes a difference.
Well, it's you know, it stands to reason that is the case, that you know, you have to put your foot in something, and hopefully it resembles the shape of your foot.
There you go. Thanks very much. Our guest this morning on Focus 580 this hour has been Dr. Robert Bourne, a podiatrist with Carl Clinic in Urbana, and we do appreciate all the calls this morning.